Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this, what we give. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday afternoon. I don't know if you just heard that echo. They were saying that Skype was having issues. I had to double check and see how it sounded even on my own phone. It sounded okay. I think we're okay. Anyway, enough about me. How's everybody doing? We are back, like I said, with another program on a Tuesday afternoon during the pandemic. I've been doing a lot of Tuesday afternoon shows. Lately, it's been a little bit more night. I figured I'd get one off, bust one off before the NCAA Elite Eight games start tonight. So that's that. Okay, so we got a variety of news to touch upon. And I'm using a lot of sexual stuff here. Anyway, I need a lot of pauses. No, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously, we will get into the recap from the weekend. Dillian White scores a knockout. We'll talk about that, obviously. And also what Eddie Hearn has to say about his next two fights this year. Amanda Serrano looked damn good. And I'm talking about her fighting, come on guys, although she's very pretty. The card itself is very good, but Amanda really put on a great display of, you know, coming forward and putting combinations together, but also using distance, making adjustments, really, really great performance. So we'll start in the ring. Let's put it that way, like we normally do. And then we'll take a look at some fights coming up this week and the weekend. The biggest one that is Jamel Herring against Carl Frampton. MJ returns on DAZN. That's ESPN Plus, I believe, by the way, folks out there. And I mean that for the Herring Frampton. And also, we got a midweek fight. I think it actually starts tomorrow morning, stateside here. So we got a lot to talk about for the weekend as well. So we're going to preview that stuff, predict some of that stuff as well, go over the schedule and whatnot. Like I said, we'll start in the ring. But we do have some news out there. Bob Arum is claiming a big, big Terrence Crawford pay-per-view is about to be announced. Coppinger just posted a story not long ago about Pacquiao and Crawford. A lot of this information, not just Coppinger, but Coppinger's article, we'll get into it a little bit. You know, it talks more about letting ESPN and the pay-per-view platforms know that he's trying to get this fight done. Cop said it's not a done deal, but we'll see. In an interview, that Bob Arum also said, you know, Pac's not just our only option, and Keith Thurman kind of came up in there. We'll talk about that. The Middle East is where it's at. It sounds like that's where it have to be for this type of dough. I mean, maybe not the Thurman fight. I don't know. But is this finally not just a press run and it actually will happen? Coppinger said that the deal's not done just yet, but those are sources, quote unquote. I got parentheses in there, or quotations, I should say. So who knows? Is this another Bob call, you know, cry wolf instead of boy cry? I can't really call him a boy. Bob cry wolf, or is it finally, you know, that he's been put in a corner and he finally has to produce the big fight? We'll see. We'll see. Maybe that this fight, something's going to happen this week as far as an announcement. That's what Bob says anyway. Could that explain some of Terrence Crawford's comments lately? I mentioned just a few last week. Oh, boy, that got some fanboys. I'll follow up on some of that stuff. But he also, there's more comments that he's made in some interviews, and also his little tweet brigade too. Maybe that's why he's doing this, because he knows he's got a Pacquiao or Thurman fight, or maybe like the Thurman. This is what I think. If, let's just say, theoretically, if Crawford fought Thurman, which would be like, really, that's happening? He could be like, hey, I'm taking care of stuff that, you know, Spence doesn't want. He said he didn't want him. I'll take care of him. You know, that's, I really wish Crawford would use that angle. And maybe he will. We'll see. But he seems pretty damn confident, and so does Bob. And to puff up his chest like that, you know, maybe this time actually is going to happen. Who knows? Who knows? There's some other news out there, no doubt about it. Some current fight news that we'll get to. Teofimo Lopez Sr. is talking about the only way that we fight on Top Rank is on pay-per-view. That's it. That's all. He also said some other stuff about taking a stand and just talking some wild stuff. This has never been seen. It's never been done before. It's never been seen since maybe Tyson. Well, we'll tell you all about it. It's a slap in the face to Ali, though. One of his comments. That's freaking ridiculous. Speaking of a slap in the face, the PBC on Fox quality has been poor. It's something that's well documented here on this podcast. Pretty easy to tell since they've been back from the pandemic. We talked about it here and there. I have a segment on it. Just kind of throwing stuff at the wall like we normally do, see what sticks, see what makes sense. Use some facts, though, in there, not just going off of an article or a little birdie or Glazer, right? We'll see. We'll see what's up with that. I mean, could it just be budget cuts? Could it be deeper than that? We'll talk a variety of stuff. And the reason why it's like a question mark is because of the fights since the pandemic. Most of them have been subpar, to say the least. And then now this Ruiz Areola on pay-per-view. I like the undercard as far as undercard pay-per-views go. I'll say that. For instance, if that was Luis Ortiz against Andy Ruiz with that undercard, sign me the F up. But that, let me look at it again. No, it says Areola. I don't see Luis Ortiz. So we're going to get into that, and it's not just the knee jerk. They're done. They're dead. We're going to dump gasoline on a fire and then put dirt all in the dig their grave, like for so many years, many of the media members out there, boxing media members, did. It won't be just the knee jerk segment. I'm going to add layers. They say they're out of money. They say this. They say that. They talked a gang of crap, a lot of media members, on these pay-per-views that Fox has done. And really, this is the one that you should be talking shit about. Sure, I get that. But the Pacquiao Thurman, Pacquiao Spence, just acting like they're garbage. And you know what? I got news for you. Fox Sports was happy with them. They were happy with them. So it's a little deeper than they just ran out of money. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Oscar De La Hoya is back. Well, we already kind of knew that was going to happen. It sounds like it's July 3rd. There's a variety of stuff we'll get to in the current fight news. And, of course, the boxing Twitter segment where we expose fanboys or media members acting like fanboys or just great tweets couple of them the last couple of days where you go, yes, I'm retweeting that type of stuff. We'll get into it. Like I said, we'll start in the ring, and then we'll go from there. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. But, you know, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope and download the show directly there or listen to it in the browser. If you don't want to, you can. But you don't have to. You can find the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast under Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. Okay, the plans start as low as $69 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract, cloud DVR available. You can stream it anywhere on any device. And right now, if you sign up for the Choice Package, it gives you a free year of HBO Max, plus for a limited time, NBA League Pass Premium for the rest of the season. Limited time on that. Showtime's only $11 on that. Boxing fans just, you know, on this platform. That's AT&T TV. Okay, so there's a lot to get to. There's a lot to get into in a somewhat short amount of time. Like I said, I want to try to bang this out. I was going to keep furthering. Just, I got to stop. I was going to do the show, okay? I'm not going to blow any backs out or any cheeks or anything like that, okay? Pause. If you thought I meant that. But anyway, we're gonna try to bang this one out before this college basketball starts, because I know everyone will be tuning into that, not everyone, but you know what I'm saying. All right, Dillian White, pull back in. Now, I did put some Skrilla. Well, I picked Povetkin to win. I'll say that. I did put some Skrilla on it, on some you know, decent odds for Povetkin. But I also backed it up with a knockout, because I figured, you know, whoever wins this fight is going to win by a knockout. So had it gone the distance, I would have had a little issue, unless Povetkin won, of course. Anyway, kudos to Dillian White for getting the job done. It's not easy to come back from a knockout defeat and win the next fight. Hasn't been done, you know, so many times over the years. Yeah, but throughout a year, per se, that doesn't happen a lot. That doesn't happen a lot. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, Povetkin, you know, barely even got touched and his legs were gone, his equilibrium. And that is true. He didn't look good. He didn't look great at the weigh-in. Didn't, you know, that's actually when I put the KO money down. I was like, okay, yeah, something, this, the COVID. I understand that he had COVID and it sounded like it was a very serious one. I think he had to be hospitalized. Don't quote me on that. But, yeah, he didn't look good from the start. There was, like, a weird right hand that kind of landed, but it looked like there was a left hook that kind of glanced. And then there was definitely some left hooks in a few overhand rights later. But Povetkin looked stumbling and bumbling right off the bat. It was like, whoa, what? Is he – test him now. Is he clean? COVID, I'm saying. But like I said, I don't want to take too much away from that, because he did have a fair amount of time, I think, to get back, and he did sign up for it. So it is what it is. You know, what are you going to do? Either way, Povetkin did show heart. I mean, there was plenty of back and forth for the little amount of time that Povetkin was not completely hurt. Definitely in the second round, there's back and forth. There was a late right hand, too, that landed directly on White's chin, I believe. Or maybe it was his forehead. I can't remember. He also, Povetkin, got off to a good start in the third. But then three clean right hands in that round, I remember specifically. Man, he started to be like, okay, dude, he's really hurt now. And then some early lands on Povetkin in the fourth. Povetkin did fire back, but then a right hand really hurt Povetkin, and a left hook, and he went down, and then it was just a TKO. And I'll tell you what, there wasn't much complaining, wasn't much debate from Povetkin going, what the hell, why am I, what? No, it wasn't really that at all. So for those who were saying, you know, that they should have let it go longer, I mean, maybe you're right, but Povetkin was the guy in there fighting. He didn't really make a big stink about the fight being. Kudos to Povetkin for getting in there, whatever, right? You can't, you know, he was hurt from the start, it looked like. But kudos to Dillian White, too, because he, like I said, it's not as easy as people are saying. Don't get me wrong, that was like a, you know, slob knocker, right? Slobbery knocker to the highest degree, I think is what I said last week. Kind of lived up to it. I mean, Dillian White didn't look great, you know, I mean, if we're being honest. Like, he was swinging for the fences. He didn't look great. He was lighter than he had been. Didn't really look great, though, I'll say that. But, how often does Dillian White just look phenomenal in a fight? He's usually in exciting fights, though, or at least a good chunk of them, and then maybe like heavyweights, you know, included most, a lot of them, will get tired, and maybe it'll be more like leaning on each other. But he can recoup in fights really well, and he's got a lot of heart. He's a pretty damn good heavyweight in my mind. But, yeah, he didn't look great. By the way, that Ted Cheeseman fight, I didn't get a chance to see it because today I was going to watch it right before the show, and the DAZN app was, I had to take it on, off. It just kept freezing. So I'm going to have to go back. I did hear that that was a fun fight to watch, though, so I wanted to check that out. But I'm just being honest with you. I'm literally about 90 minutes ago, maybe a little less, trying to watch that good old Teddy Cheeseman, but he did get a W. If that matters. Now, you know, Povetkin, this was kind of a loser-leave-town as far as major fights of the heavyweight division. Not to say they couldn't, you know, Povetkin couldn't continue to, you know, be a gatekeeper or I don't know. Maybe he'll get a big fight at some point, but Dillian White now puts himself in a better spot than he just previously was, obviously. Eddie Hearn talked about a summer fight and then a possible fight with Wilder later in the year. He's talking about it, fill up a stadium. Are we talking the UK? That would be a great fight. Let Wilder get back and fight someone this summer and then fight. That'd be huge. Maybe Ruiz. They're lining that up. You know what I mean? For Wilder, I'm saying. But, yeah, Dillian White against Wilder, I would be down. I think it's a really fun fight to watch. Someone's getting knocked out. But who knows? Who knows? I like that fight a lot. We'll see if that were to happen. We really got to kind of see what, you know, what the plans are, you know, because Wilder is still in, you know, he's still waiting on some step-aside money is what it sounds like because, you know, the litigation due to him and Tyson Fury's rematch clause that, quote-unquote, expired. Even though we are now close to April, and it looks like that's not going to get solved till May. But we're good. There's not going to be a problem at all. See, that Bob just said that. Oh, we're locking. And don't get me wrong, maybe in the end he will not have to pay him anything, but, man, it sure took a lot longer. You know, it's kind of crazy. Yes. We'll see where Dillian White goes from here. Like I said, really great job by him. Not a great performance, but it's tougher than people are giving him credit to come back off of a knockout like that. Now, Ring City USA, I think, probably had their best card. And I think, was it their best rating or their second best rating? I think it was their first best. On average, anyway, the average card. For them. So that's a good news. Ring City USA definitely having a good start to their show, I guess you could say. But Amanda Serrano, she won most of the rounds, but there was a lot of, like, fun action. You know what I mean? Serrano was landing the clean shots. Bermudez, was it Bermudez? She would close really well in a round, or kind of like make her pay Serrano for coming in. She would always be like, hey, take that with you. And then she was getting aggressive and landing good shots. So there was a lot of action in this fight. You could see somewhere in the third or fourth round, Amanda was like, you know what? I'm getting hit clean here. So I'm going to make an adjustment. It started boxing well at range, countering well, especially with the left hook, jabs, showing her footwork. And she just made a great adjustment, you know. She would be on the outside, circle, pivot, use her jab, pot shot. So I thought she used the distance and made that adjustment tremendously. I mean, that was a great adjustment by her. There were, from like maybe the sixth to eighth round, there were spurts of two-way action. Really, like I said, really fun action fight, I thought. Serrano just landed the better shots, the harder combinations, working to the head and body. And, you know, all of a sudden, ninth round, hard left hooks and a body shot scored the knockout. That's one of the funnest ways to win a fight. Well, actually, I don't win fights, so but it is fun to see a body shot. So kudos to what was her name? Bermudez. She's damn good. I liked her a lot. She brought that pressure. Just getting worn down and just fought a more versatile fighter. That's all. Then we had the Baez, back-to-back Baez fights. One of them against Ortiz. And Baez, that was an easy win. I think it was two scorecards had it 79-73, and then 80-27. I had it about 7-1, maybe 6-2. Eduardo Baez took care of business. He was landing like, I mean, it was actually a great opening round, but his uppercuts and hooks were the difference there. Started landing hooks with both hands to the body. He was just more active. And both of them, a lot of the rounds were landing good shots on the inside. It just, you know, Baez would be just better. The fourth round was really close. Like I said, there's a round or two that you could probably give to Ortiz. But even in close rounds, I just thought the cleaner, more effective shots and combinations. And we're Baez, and Baez started jabbing and circling, and you know, it was a good fight. He had the movement, and he'd throw combinations, so he looked pretty good. Now, what is it, Leonardo Baez, he took on, Caraballo? I think it's Caraballo. And, like, he was landing flush combos the last minute of the first round. You can kind of see the writing is on the wall. Back-to-back left uppercut, scored a knockdown with under a minute left of the second round. Three hard left hands the last few seconds, too, by Caraballo. And, dude, I mean, I was really impressed with this guy. I believe Baez was the favorite coming in. Now he was, you know, digging to the body with his left hook, and I think the third round was close, but the clean punching was just starting to add up on Baez. I mean, Caraballo was just one shot after another in the fourth round, literally one shot after another, then a body shot hurt him, and before you know it, you saw the white towel coming in from the corner, and it looked like Baez was going to be able to stand and take those shots. He was showing heart and acting like he wasn't hurt, but he definitely was. So it was a good corner. decision. Sometimes we don't always see that. So that was nice. Not nice that he got, TKO'd, but the corner throw in, that was good. That was really good. He's going to have to kind of rebuild. I think it was Carlos, right? Caraballo. He looked damn good, man. He looked damn good. And I'm assuming they'll have him back on. Who knows? Maybe someone will scoop him up. I actually don't know who he's tied to. I know, Ring City USA is big on, we're not worried about who we're tied to and stuff like that. So, it's not a normal, it's more just a prospect mid-level and some championship stuff, kind of all thrown in there, Yeah, I enjoyed the card. Like I said, I believe it definitely was their best card, and they got off to a great start. And as I mentioned, they also got their best rating. And some people will look at that and be like, "Oh yeah, but nobody's watching it, dude. Look at you call that the best rating." But see, this is the difference between a common fan, a casual fan, and a hardcore fight fan. And a lot of people on boxing Twitter, or maybe a good chunk, maybe not a lot, but they act like hardcore fight fans, but then they don't watch this, or they don't watch the FS1 cards or Showbox or stuff like that, And we hear, I'm a hardcore fight fan, this, that, and the third, but it's just weird because the things that get 80,000 viewers or 120 or even 200,000 or 300,000, and that's right now, that's where Showtime is, right? There can be good fights. Sorry, I had to mute there real quick. I coughed randomly. There can be good fights anywhere, right? A mid-level fight is a mid-level fight. A prospect getting tested is something we need more of. That's what I think all these network deals that have been made over the last couple of years, that's like the biggest thing. I've stressed that the mid-level fight, whether it's two vets going at it, two guys trying to, build back their career, a prospect getting tested, whatever, those fights have thrived in this environment. And I don't think that's appreciated because that's something that a lot of media folks were asking them for. So it's kind of funky because even like, let's say pay-per-view, when a fight does 300,000, people say, "Oh, that's just the hardcores." Are you sure? You sure 300,000 people bought that pay-per-view and those are hardcores? So why in the hell wouldn't they watch a much cheaper or completely free show then? You know what I mean? That always makes me, it's like, okay, where the hell For Kovalev in Ward 1 and 2, where the hell were the casuals there then? Like, I just think that people don't understand these ratings. They'd rather just rip them on Twitter to get likes and retweets. But I'm glad that their ratings have improved lately, even if it's incremental. This was their best card, in my opinion. And they've been pretty solid, I think. So, shouts out to Ring City USA. As far as we'll get into news and all that stuff, I'll check Boxing Scene and some other places here during the show just in case this Bob Arum stuff does pop off. Right now, Miguel Cotto and Juan Manuel Marquez exhibition is what's, on the talk of the town. No, I'm just kidding, not the fucking town. But on Boxing Scene right now. So another exhibition on pay-per-view. But you know what? The press is going to eat it up more than because it's popular fighters. And when popular fighters fight, no matter what they're doing, exhibition on pay-per-view or not, and what's hurting the sport or not, they'd rather shit and dump on a quality pay-per-view than... And then they'll just let these go, or they'll promote them. They like Coppinger's promoting Triller, which doesn't really have real fights. I mean, just yet. I mean, the Teofimo Lopez will be a real fight, but that's a real fight mandatory on paper. But then he'll scream and yell that Fury and Wilder should have been on normal TV and not pay-per-view. It's funky. It's funky. Well, what's going on here? But anyway, and I'm not hating on the exhibitions. You know, it is what it is. If Marquez and Cotto want to make some money and exhibit their skills, I'm cool with it. Doesn't mean I have to buy it, though. I'm not going to build it up on some epic proportion and be like, oh, dude, this could be a great fight, though. This could be great, man. But I'm going to jump on the Charlo pay-per-view that was deep and had some great fights on it. You know, that's what bugs me. But you know that. You know that. All right, this weekend, actually, in less than 24 hours, 12 hours probably, the Tim Tszyu takes on Dennis Hogan, which I think might be, could be interesting. We'll see where exactly Hogan is. Lately, he hasn't looked as good. He did look good a couple years ago against Munguia. Obviously, he had a rough one against Charlo, but that was at 160, whereas this one's at 154. I know there were some issues with sponsors. It was like a betting website sponsor, and they were, I don't know, I haven't caught back up with the story yet, but I did hear that, I think this was on BoxingScene.com, that Horn, yeah, Jeff Horn, that's what it is, Dennis Hogan, that he had some sponsorship having to do with, you know, gambling, like betting, I'm assuming on his trunks or maybe on his gear on the way out. I don't know. But it was a direct competitor with a sponsor for the fight. So they were trying to, you know, take money out of his pocket because obviously you make money there. So I don't know if they just paid him and shut him up or if he's going to be allowed to do it or what, or the ultimatum was there and he said, all right, screw it. I don't know. But that's a good fight for Tim Tszyu where he's at. I like Tim Tszyu. I think he's got a pretty good future here. And obviously a tough division. I think he can beat some folks at the division. I'm not ready to say he's going to beat Charlo. But this is a good fight for him. He's clearly the favorite. I mean, I don't think I've seen anything under than a – definitely nothing under a plus 500 as an underdog. But we'll see. You know, we'll see how this looks. I'm going to watch it tomorrow, probably during the afternoon, because I'm not going to watch it at 6 in the morning or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not going to do it. But, you know, it's nice to see Tim Tszyu back and to, you know, see how he continues that ride to wherever he goes. He's a good fighter. Obviously, you got the name. Making some noise, that's for sure. But I think he'll win. I don't know if he'll knock him out. If so, I'm going to call for a TKO, but I think he'll, I'll say TKO if it's a knockout. But I think it'd be a fun fight to watch for a little bit, and then I think Tim Tszyu will just kind of overwhelm him. Akmaldiyev? MJ is what a lot of he's actually fighting Iwasa. It should be nothing's a walk in the park per se, but it's a mandatory defense. Might be fun stylistically, but I think he'll get through it pretty easily. You know, all things considered. Now, Carl Frampton versus Jamel Herring is the closest fight on paper. If you look at it, and actually it's gotten even tighter. I'm looking at five dimes right now, minus 105 and minus 115. Frampton's the minus 115. And then I see a couple of plus 100s for Herring and minus 125, 139 for Frampton. So the betting, I feel like Herring was, it was like that was flipped not long ago. So maybe the late money's coming on Frampton. You know, Frampton just hasn't looked great in a while. He hasn't been himself. Featherweight is where I think he topped out weight-wise. I think 130 is going to be an issue, especially Jamel Herring, who's a big 130-pounder, and it sounds like after this fight, he's going to go to 35 maybe. Now, maybe if he wins, maybe he does fight Shakur Stevenson. I don't know. But he's a big boy, and he's got skill too. It's not like he's just some big dude and he's going to bully him. I mean, he'll throw combinations and he'll go at somebody, but he's got a good jab. He's got good fundamentals. He can move pretty well. I just think he beats Frampton. Now, I'm not saying it's a walkthrough. I'm not saying he's going to TKO him, but especially at the weight, I mean, there's an outside chance he'd stop him like TKO style, but I don't think so. I think it'll be competitive. I mean, I think it could be a clear win, but, you know, 8-4, 7-5. So I'm not saying he's going to tend to him or nothing like that, or like I said, destroy him. But I just like, Herring's got skill. Like I said, he's got fundamentals. He's got a good jab. His mental game is on point. He, you know, it seems like he's even more focused than he was when he's in the ring, not just training. And that Ito fight where, you know, he got off to a good start, and then it kind of looked like the Shabakov fight where the dude was starting to overwhelm him, and he stood his ground. He also used his skill, like I said, circling away, pivoting away. I like Herring in this one to win by decision. Could be a split decision, maybe a majority decision, but I'd say 8-4, 7-5. I think, you know, the last couple rounds, let's say after 8, I think that the fight will still, the outcome, as far as, you know, you and I watching it, you know, who knows about scorecards, but I think the outcome will still be on the table, you know. But Frampton, Neil Herring gets good starts. Frampton needs a good start. If he doesn't get a good start, then it might get a little more one-sided. But I just think that it's been a long time coming in this fight, too. Dude, there's been injuries. There's been COVID. This thing took a long time. And it's no fight, you know, no fault of either fighter. I'm just saying, like, wow, it really did when you think about it, you know. It's like, damn, it really, really is taking a while. But yeah, that's about it for the weekend. Like I said, I just think MJ on the zone, it's nice that, you know, MJ looked really good against Daniel Ramon last, what was that, January 2020, I think, right? That was a competitive fight, but considering how many fights he had, I really liked what I saw in there. Now it's over a year. A lot of people have been out for over a year, 15 months or something like that, so because of COVID. You know, a lot of it is because of that. So maybe he won't look as good right away, get some of that rust off, but I see him, you know, winning pretty easily. So let's get in to some news and notes and all that good stuff. We might, and I have a PBC quality control budget cuts. What is going on, basically? You know, on PBC on Fox, just to clear that up. I do have a segment coming a little later here. You know, the cards have been subpar, mediocre at best, but, you know, a good chunk of them just subpar. Even the new one, Harrison Perella. If Harrison, you know, Harrison's been out since December 2019, that Charlo fight. So if Harrison wants to come back against an opponent like this, Perella's a good fighter. But, you know, he's a fringe dude at welterweight. So now he's going to fight at 154 in his first fight. Well, it's not his first fight at junior middleweight because I know when he was younger, I think he actually was like 150-something. I think he fought a guy that was like 155, but that's early in his career. So I actually do think he fought at this higher weight class. It's one thing to do that as a guy coming up or even in the amateurs. Right, because a lot of prospects come up and then they get to a targeted weight and then they get down to it and start their career as far as a contender and try to be a champion. I don't mind the fight, but for it to be a Fox main event, that's where it comes into play, where you're like, well, don't get me wrong, the last Durrell fight actually turned out competitive. So at the end of that fight, I wasn't complaining much, but for a main event, let's just put it this way. The first since, what was it, late 2018, that's right, because they started out with the Charlo twins. Since December 2019 all the way to the pandemic, and then now post-pandemic, it's two different schedules. It's a clear drop in quality. So we're going to talk about why. Is it just budget cuts? Is there, you know, smoke to the fire or fire to the smoke is in rumors from some folks out there about this the last year on the deal? I mean, we've brushed upon this, but I'm going to dig into it a little bit more. Talk about the pay-per-views. That's the thing, Rui. So, Ariel, that's why I figured, well, okay, let's just talk about this. You know, let's just talk about this because they were happy with the pay-per-views. I know a lot of folks will tell you, you know, 275 or 315 or 345 or whatever is bad, but they weren't saying that when HBO and Pacquiao and all these dudes, when they were, you know, climbing up, were doing those type of numbers. They weren't saying, the press wasn't consistently saying, those are bad pay-per-views, they shouldn't be on it. They were making money. So there is a lot of disinformation out there as far as making money and that type of thing. So we're going to kind of just look at it all. But, I mean, thing about Fox is they literally have the earnings report. They have a quarterly thing, the 10-K. Like, you can read it. And some of these media members have probably read it, and they're just keeping it close to the vest, or they just would rather clickbait. Anyway, so we'll talk about that. But let's start with what could be a big deal. One of the titles is Arum Claims Big Bud Paper. I just said Big Bud because, you know, I had to fit it in. I only got so many characters that I can put in there. But Bob Arum, and this is from Barbershop Conversations, who I see as totally biased, but you do got to give credit for some of the interviews and some of the information he's gotten out of Bob and others. So Bob is claiming this week that Crawford is going to be in a big pay-per-view. And this isn't your average run-of-the-mill Jose Cito Lopez fight. This is a big opponent. He also mentioned how Pacquiao is not our only option. A lot of people are pointing to Porter or Thurman. You just assume it's going to be in the Middle East. I'm not sure, but you'd assume that. So the Porter thing, I've been behind that fight for quite some time. Right now, though, I don't want it because, you know, Porter has COVID. So if you're going to have this announcement and have a press conference and the dude still maybe have COVID and they're going to, you know, I just don't want to be like, all right, I think I'm done with COVID. I'm going right into training camp and start. That would suck, to be honest with you. Like, we finally got a Crawford-Porter fight, something that has been talked about for a little bit now, and it would be him having COVID. He couldn't last Thursday, he couldn't be on the broadcast. And I just saw a podcast. I didn't see his whole podcast, but, you know, he has no sense, he has senses, but his sense, the sense of smell is not there still, he said. So, I don't really want to announce a big pay-per-view fight when dude has just had COVID. You know, it's one thing to have COVID or test for COVID the week of the fight and then you delay it. But when it comes to this high-level fight, I mean, I'd bring up Povetkin and COVID and how he didn't look good, but it seems like Povetkin had a worse case of it. But who knows? Like I said, I didn't watch the whole episode, so maybe he did say I've been struggling. I don't know. Anyway, so a lot of people, the whole Thurman thing, and Ness on the Boxing Voice, shouts out to him. They played a clip of a follow-up question, and here's why some people think it's Thurman, right? Or Pacquiao, I guess, even though Pacquiao's not with Al. But then we hear he is, but then he's not. No, he's not. He's not with Al anymore. Okay, whatever. I'm not, you know. But they followed up an answer with another question to Bob, and Bob was basically saying, hey, people that we're working with, you know, usually I'll say, hey, we got to fight in June or this, that, and the other. But the people that we're doing this deal with Crawford, have asked to keep it quiet. So that sounds like Al Haymon. Now, the dude on the show said, hey, so Thurman's people told you to keep it quiet? And he said, yeah, they want us to keep it quiet. So I don't know if he for sure heard the Thurman part. And Ness made a good point of, you know, when you're on Skype and he's on a phone and this, that, and the other, there's a live broadcast going on, sometimes you can miss some of it. And, you know, hey, I've always said, you know, I give Bob shtick, but I hope to have even a third or half of his energy at that age. But you never know. You know what I mean? So the Thurman one would be like, whoa, dude, I didn't see that coming. And it's funny because I just saw something about Thurman's going to be back in July, but it was against like par competition just to get, you know, his feet under him. So I don't know. I'm not really sure. Actually, I saw a couple things. One of them, was it Boxing News 24 talking about he's targeting July, Berto or Alexander or somebody else like that, or Ugas. Obviously, he's probably not going to get Ugas, but so that would be big if that was the case. Now, as far as the Manny Pacquiao stuff goes, basically, Coppinger, who just put out, you know, an article, he basically was like, Abu Dhabi is where it's at, is where the fight's going to take place, or they're trying to take, you know, for it to take place there. He basically was like, hey, you know, the fight's not done, but he did let folks know. And when I mean folks, ESPN, he let them know in the pay-per-view platforms to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to secure this fight. So, you know, what does that mean, right? But yeah, June 5th is what the story says. They're in talks for June 5th in Abu Dhabi. And he said the fight's not done, but he let the pay-per-view distributor In Demand to hold June 5th for a potential fight, exploring. So June 5th is being held by ESPN, well, to an extent if it's pay-per-view. And then, you know, the platform to buy the pay-per-view. So beyond ESPN Plus, obviously. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know really who to believe. It's tough to say. The announcement's coming this week, and he's sure of it. Then why would the deal not be done? But maybe the deal recently got done. And cop sources just, that's not there, you know? Or it is Thurman. Or it is Porter. And like I said, I hate to get down on the Porter fight after just talking it up for so long, but if they're going to fight in June, you know, that's like 8 weeks from now. I think it's like 9 weeks. And so for him to have COVID, like, I would just like a little bit of, like, if they pushed it back to August or something, that would allow Porter to be able to recover fully and then start camp rather than like, hey, I feel pretty good. I'm pretty good. And they go right into camp. I mean, I'm sure Porter would take it. I don't know if he'd take it or not, but it just sucks. It would just suck to be like, yeah, dude, everyone's pumped for this fight, but he's got COVID. So I don't know, you know, and also Terrence did say, you know, that he's a backup plan, basically. So we'll see. You know, I don't want to go too far on this because it's, we'll see. It could be all nothing. It could be that he's finally knowing that Crawford is going to, you know, be done. So with the contract potentially, so we're going to go for it, you know. Eddie Hearn has said numerous times that Manny and Crawford's definitely not happening. There's a rumor that Manny signed with the Zone out there, too. I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying it. I really don't know if it's actually true. But this is what he – I think this is Talk Sport. Oh, no, it's World Boxing News Net, so I don't know. But this is – well, actually, these are quotes from the Ock and Barak. I think it's the Hearn Report. He said that a welterweight super fight between Terrence Crawford and Manny Pacquiao is definitely not going to happen. That's what he said. It's just not happening. That's what Eddie said. So does he have the Pacquiao-Mikey Garcia fight, and he's trying to finalize it there? I don't know. You know, that could be. Maybe that is. I don't know. But I just want to see, like, I'm going to be, like, I want Pacquiao to fight Spencer Crawford. If he doesn't, I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, he's fighting Mikey, that's bullshit. Because, dude, he's earned his right at this point. And the fact that he even fought Thurman, I don't care if Thurman was rusty or hurt or whatever, he still fought his ass. And my point is, I either wanted Spence, or when Crawford, you know, when Pacquiao was with Top Rank, I wanted Crawford to fight him. Because it's like, hey, this is a passing of the torch. Even though that torch isn't fully lit, they're not going to use it in the Olympics. But still, it does. It puts some shine on it. It still does. It's a major, you know, it's a really solid gate. It's a big deal still. Just to have, the, you know, that name in the same sentence as Crawford and them fighting. Even if after the fight, say, oh, Pacquiao's old, this, that, and the third, it's still Terrence fought him, so casuals, it'll help him. And or it'll help Spence, whatever. I didn't care. Even Lomachenko, when he said, I don't want to fight old men. Then I think this last spring he was talking about, maybe I'll fight Pacquiao. But, you know, that 140 thing? And I get it. I mean, 135 was already high for Lomachenko. But I was on board for either of those fights. And Bob was the one that said, I'm not going to lose money on these fights. So he probably wouldn't be losing money on these fights if it is a Middle East fee, a licensing fee, you know, a site fee that just pays you a bunch, and that pays the fighters. Because obviously, and I can't hate, I mean, Pacquiao, if he wants to get paid, dude. So I can't fault them for that. But this is a direct quote from Arum. Bob Arum has declared that there were, you know, announcing a pay-per-view this week. This is a big deal. This is not just any old fight, is what he said. Would that be crazy if it was Thurman just out of nowhere? This is a couple other items just to catch you up. Bob Arum has said the determination for that, you know, Fury Wilder 3 arbitration to come in May, and asked if AJ fought or the AJ fight depends on this. He said nobody anticipates that there will be an injunction. At worst, there might be claims for damage. That's what he said on Barbershop Conversations. He also said, talking about the Spence and Crawford fight, that it should be 40-40 with the winner. 20% goes to the winner. He said, you know, Terrence annihilates Spence. Spence is too slow. Terrence is a much more skilled boxer. But the 40-40-20 go to the winner sounds good for the fans. But it's really stupid to do, because now you're going to leave it in the judge's hands. With two elite guys, a knockout can happen. I'm not saying that, but it's not as likely. So then you're just going to leave it in the hands for your money? That doesn't – I understand the fan thing behind it, but, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. Anyway, let's hope, though. I just want Crawford to get a big fight. That's what I want, okay? That's all I want. That's all I want, dude. I want him to get a big fight, whether it's Porter, Thurman. Obviously, Porter would be weird right now, but Thurman, Pacquiao, whatever. I hope it's a big fight. I hope this is not him just doing a press run like he does so many times. That's what the biggest thing here is, for me anyway. I want to see him get a big fight, dude. There was some pushback last week when I read Crawford's quotes, not me saying it or me opinion on it. You know, it was just the way he put the 50-50. He may not even do 50-50. I don't want to fight anymore. He said a bunch of stuff. And, you know, a lot of this could be just talk. You know what I mean? A lot of it could just be talk, dude. I mean, same with Spence. You know, I don't like when Spence says 80-20, right? But he could just be sick of talking about it, bullshitting, trolling. They could be trolling us both. Trolling all of us. They totally could. But it was just like, dude, you're not even – so if the purse split was 50-50, you wouldn't take the fight. And he's like, I'm past it. And maybe, just maybe, he's saying that because he knows he's got a big fight about to be announced. And so he's really standing like, screw this. You know what I mean? But just to follow up on some of that and add, you know, we talk about his tweets or comments or stuff, but – you know, when they asked him, these are what he said. I don't know, to be honest, because I'm past that. I don't even care about those titles. I've already been undisputed. He's trying to do something I already accomplished in my career. Once I move up, I get a belt in my first fight, welterweight fight. Now it's you're on the wrong side of the street. I'm going to pay you this, where they say, or I'm not going to be playing these games where they say we'll fight you when we want to, or it's on our terms. It doesn't work like that with me. I don't know, he said. I don't know where everybody's getting the information, and he's talking about whether Crawford leaves or not. But that's what people do. That's what the media does. And it's like, well, on Brian Custer's, you know, podcast, that came up. And you admitted you may have to not be with Bob anymore to get this fight. So when you say, oh, there's plenty to, you know, complain about boxing, promoters, managers, networks, and, you know, just in general. There's plenty in the media is what I meant to say. But, like, that's not the media's fault. He's like, I don't know where they're getting it from. From you, dude. He asked you about, is it October? I think his manager even said that too, trainer. I don't know, but it's just kind of funny because, like, well, you'd leave when the contract expires. Well, you actually talked about how that might be. You know, but this whole, why did he accomplish that? Yeah, you accomplished it, but you beat Victor Postol, which is his best victory in my eyes, and it's very solid. But Ndongo doesn't mean as much as these welterweight fights. It just doesn't mean it as much, you know? And this is what he said. The reason why I talked about Sean Porter on Twitter and told him to stand by is because, you know, he said it's a plan B, basically. I told Sean Porter to stand by because if the fight we're working on doesn't go through, then for sure we'll visit that fight, which I get that. I get that. We'll have to see. I don't know too many details about the negotiations. He said Ugas is another one because he got something to offer. Basically, why would I choose Sean Porter with nothing to gain when I could choose Ugas? And that's, in one way, that's like Charlo saying, why would I fight Benavidez? If I go up to 168, it's to fight Canelo or it's to fight, you know, for a strap. And, you know, the WBC could make it an interim belt for the mandatory in 9 months or whatever for Canelo. And that might be enough for Charlo to go, okay, now it's something. But for him to say, you know, well, I don't want to fight Porter because he doesn't have anything. Why would I choose Porter with nothing to gain when I choose Ugas? I'm fighting for something. That's a no-brainer. Everybody in the game, or should I say 65% of people, felt Ugas beat Sean Porter. Given that fact, if me and him were to fight and how the fight goes, how I look against him, they would compare that to the Sean Porter fight. So he's saying if I beat Ugas cleaner, it'd be the same difference. The problem is Ugas hasn't fought any other guys yet. It sounds like he's going to fight Spence in July or whatever, but here's the thing, though, and don't get me wrong. It was a very competitive fight. If you thought Ugas won, if you thought Porter won, it was a draw. I get it. It was tight. I'd have been just fine with a draw because both of them left a lot of meat on the bone. They were just kind of nibbling. I don't know if they just weren't hungry, but they did. They did. They both, you could criticize both and go, well, you didn't do this, dude, so you didn't deserve to win. Whatever. Deserves a weird thing when it comes to boxing, right? In life, I guess, in general. But, you know, the whole Ugas thing, well, you know what he said? What did he say, 65%? Okay, cool. 65% of people thought Ugas won. Well, more than 65% of the people thought Pacquiao beat Horn. But he says, well, I beat the man that beat the man. So you see how it works? You know, he uses it for this, but then the other way is like, well, okay, but did Pacquiao really lose to Horn? Because 65%, more than 65%. So it's kind of a fluff off. I see what he's saying, but I don't know. And he says, Terrence says Porter's win over Ugas wasn't clean cut. When Sean Porter's commenting, people say you didn't even give Ugas his rematch. You got to fight Ugas. That's always in the back of Sean Porter. You got to fight Ugas. Everybody felt that Ugas won. Some people say, I'll give it to Sean, but it was close. It wasn't. It was never a clear cut. Kind of like the area, Errol Spence. Some people feel Porter pulled it off, blah, blah, blah. I'm not a judge of the fight. He's not a judge of the fight, but he just judged the other one. This is what I'm talking about. And like I said, people say stuff all the time. I don't like when, you know, if he actually means the 80-20 thing, because then the fight will never happen. These guys are frustrated, they're pissed, whatever. But if he re-ups with Top Rank without getting the big fight, I just think that's ridiculous. Now, he could go the DAZN route maybe, right? Maybe they'd give him a big deal. I could see that. Maybe he could fight Ortiz over there. Maybe Boots could go over there and fight him. Who knows? But I don't know. I mean, he keeps saying that, you know, he's been trying to get these fights. They never, I mean, the only offer was Danny Garcia when they called Angel's dad. They never sent the offer to Al. They didn't offer Porter. The Thurman thing was a lie. I mean, Bob's never come back and said $10 million again. So, I mean, we assume it's allegedly a lie. It sounds like it is because, like I said, usually Bob comes back out and fires. But because basically Thurman said that I didn't make a number. They made up the $10 million. Maybe it did, maybe not. Either way, they didn't counteroffer. Okay, well, here's five. Okay, seven. Well, blah, 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 that type of thing. So I don't know. I mean, Terrence went off on Twitter a little bit, and, you know, he says, if anybody's been following my career and not listening to the nonsense that people say, then you know I tried to fight all these champions in my division years ago. It's like, years ago, dude? But talk is cheap, and I understand that. Wait. Tell him to get a belt first. He not a real welterweight. He's on the wrong side of the street. He didn't beat nobody. I done heard it all, but glove up. I'm over it. When I say it's a wrap, then that's it. I don't want to ask about, don't ask me about it more. I'm not going to talk about it. And, you know, I understand that. I get what he's saying. And like I said, a lot of this is just frustration, right? But to sit there and say, you know, I just think that, aren't you frustrated with your promoter then? Or frustrated that, well, I don't know if he's frustrated that he re-signed with them because his guarantee was high, but the thing is, the whole, I mean, when Spence came up, what were the PBC dudes saying? Well, he's got to get a belt. He's got to, you know, it happens on most levels, dude. This is boxing. And then when you get, it's kind of like Teofimo, right? He got to the top, and now he's like, I'm only pay-per-view, and I'm doing this fight, F you. It's like, well, hold on. I thought you weren't about the money. No, I'm getting paid now. Well, now you're mad at him because he's going to get paid? Like I said, I'm glad he's getting paid, but I'm not going to buy that pay-per-view his next fight. It's not a pay-per-view level main event in my eyes, and it should be in most people's eyes. But it's called human behavior. And I know a lot of people, back in the 80s or 70s, these dudes would just glove up and blah. Dude, these dudes were getting – some of these guys – well, first of all, some of the big fights, they were free agents. And some of these dudes had four or six guys, managers, promoters, eating off their salary. Is that what you want to go back to? It's silly, dude. It's pretty silly. But, I mean, so the thing is, they've never had a full negotiation. So how can you be sick? Like, I tried to get it. It's done. Now, if they said, we're in negotiations for a fight, you know, at this time, we're in negotiation, and they go through the whole negotiation process and come out of it, and Cropper said he wouldn't budge, only 80-20 or something like that. Well, then now you got something there. But most of it's been talk. And the funniest thing is, you know, I've said this before. You cannot like what Spence said to Terrence Crawford and Bob, but he freaking said it straight up, and he's done exactly what he said he was going to do. Now, you may not like it. Terrence may not like it. I get it. I totally get it. And if, you know, right now, that 40-40 thing and the winner gets 20, if Bob had Spence and Spence was clearly more valuable, he'd be saying this fight can't happen until it's 70-30 or whatever, 60-40, you know, so just the same old stuff. But I really hope that all this tweeting of that we're done, I'm never going to talk about it, means a Thurman or Pacquiao fight. Pacquiao fight would be the best, but Thurman would be a damn good fight. And also, you could kind of see the pay-per-view numbers with Thurman then, how that would do. But I'm guessing if it's Middle East money, I think it'd have to be Pacquiao. Maybe I'm wrong on that, though. We'll see. I just hope it's somebody. I mean, really, to be honest with you, realistically, Pac or Thurman at this point. Because what else would be a big, big, not your run-of-the-mill? I mean, Spence, yeah, but that's not going to happen, right? I'd be glad to be wrong on that. And then the Porter thing, it just sounds like they're already saying he's the plan B, and now he's got COVID, so he's not going to – I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they'd stoop to that. But who knows? Who knows? You never know. Like I said, there is a pretty strong rumor. I think – was it Steve Kim? I think he said it, that Ugas – Spence and Ugas is in July. Oscar De La Hoya is back July 3rd. Dallas Stadium, AT&T, multi-field with Triller. Pay-per-view is dead, I thought. I thought pay-per-view was dead, Oscar. Now you're on Triller fighting against an MMA fighter. But remember what he said to Floyd and McGregor. And, of course, he was mad because, what was it, 3 weeks later, a month later, Canelo and Golovkin. But he said, oh, my God, he said it was fake fight and blah, 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 this and that, and this is horrible, oh my God, and then look what happened. It's just like the media, too. I'm calling out Oscar, but I can call out parts of the media, too. Coppinger's out here pumping up Triller. Hey, if you're part of the broadcast team, cool. But don't use it to be like, dude, this is awesome. This is great, man. That purse bid was epic, dude. Well, didn't you care about how much money they make on pay-per-views and what's pay-per-view worthy? No, it's because you're getting paid, that's why. So I'm ripping Oscar, but there's plenty to go around. But yeah, Oscar thought it was a joke fight, and now pay-per-view's dead, he said too, because, you know, he had to because he was on the zone. So it is what it is. I wonder, though, what that does to Spence Ugas if, in fact, that is at AT&T Stadium. Because what are you going to do, AT&T Stadium 3 weeks later? That doesn't seem like that would make much sense. Maybe they would do one closer to his at SMU. He did talk about SMU. I think that's closer to his house or where he lives or where he's from. SMU, that's an outdoor stadium. Maybe they do it there. And it'd be a little – it'd still be an outdoor stadium, but it wouldn't be as big as that. I don't know. I wonder, though. I wonder how that's going to work. But, yeah, Oscar is back. He did the mic drop and everything, dude. Oh, my God. It was just – epic, bro. It was so epic. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, Teofimo Lopez Sr. You know, he's talking about, you know, how his son doing something that's never been seen before. He said, I mean, we haven't seen this since Tyson. So forget Oscar. Forget Floyd. Forget Manny. You know, this hasn't been done. This type of thing, this type of movement, it hasn't been done in a long time. And we're out here saying to these promoters, basically, it's taking a stand for the fighters. And even though Al Haymon actually, talking about promoters, he took a stand for the fighters based off how much he takes out of the fighter instead of the promoter running stuff so much. Or manager or promoter taking 33. Al did something about that. I think he forgets that. But this is what he said. We ain't fighting with Top Rank no more, okay? And this is from Fight Hype, by the way. Unless it's pay-per-view. We are pay-per-view. My son has done things that nobody else has done. And I think he's talking about the belts and the age, which that's legit. But we're in position now to create a monster in the boxing industry no one has seen in a long, long, long time. So like I said, forget Oscar, Floyd, and Manny, I guess, right? He's going to make a lot of money with my son. I told Bob Arum the first day, this is the kid that's going to bring up this company. And they got to do, all they got to do is believe in us. The money will come. We fought Lomachenko for pennies. We're not doing that anymore. It's the takeover, baby. We're taking over the boxing game. And all that stuff is, some of it's a little overdone, but okay, you know. He went on to say that there's a lot of damage to the relationship and all that, and I do get that. He's talking about the mandatory situation where he can just keep going to purse bid. Lomachenko will be in there, though, if this keeps going to purse bid based off the rankings. If they keep – these belts are going to bring up your man, though. Well, it's one of them is going to be Loma, that's for sure. So he lost me on the just skip by those three guys I mentioned and go right to Tyson. But I get it. He's a promoter in a sense, right? But this is where he really lost. We're taking a stand. We're putting the sport of boxing on the big stand because we're showing these boxers that they're worth more than the promoters think they're worth. Like I said, Al Heyman's doing that already. But that's cool. But here's where he lost me. We took a stand for that. This is big. This is like the Muhammad Ali era when Muhammad stood for his rights. He didn't want to go fight in the Vietnam War. It's the same shit we're doing with my son. He's standing up for the rights for fighters. They deserve more money, but they're scared of these promoters because they're scared of promoters to sit them down. But we got a contract. Oh, sit them down, but we got a contract. I don't know how that ended there. It was kind of weird. Anyway, you know, to sit there and say that relates to him in any form or fashion, Ali, is just despicable. Like, come on, dude. You're talking about getting more money and it's standing. We're taking a stand? We're taking a stand for that? You're taking a – okay, you can say you're taking a stand. That's cool. To relate it to Muhammad Ali. I thought Raging Babe and her tweet was perfect. This is a little boxing Twitter peekaboo, actually. Muhammad Ali was sentenced to 5 years in prison for refusing to be drafted to the Vietnam War. Ali was denied a boxing license in every state. He wasn't allowed to compete for almost 4 years. Do not compare Ali's stance on anything to fighters today commanding more money. And that is a great tweet. Because, I mean, it's just like Ali. Oh, boy. You can sit there and say, you know, we're going to make more money than Floyd did. That's your opinion. Cool. But don't start doing the Ali shit. Like, come on, senior. That's despicable, dude. That's just despicable. Okay. So we do have some current fight news coming up. We will end, per usual, on our boxing Twitter segment where we expose fanboys or media members acting like fanboys or just bomb-ass tweets like, yep, just like the one that I read from Raging Babe. She was right on that one, that's for sure. I want to talk about quality control, budget cuts, rumor mill PBC on Fox stuff, okay? Like I said, ever since the pandemic came back, it went from hit to miss to basically missing, right? And the new Fox card, straight up main event prime time, is Harrison against Brian Perella. And, you know, Perella's a fine fighter, and I know somebody will probably say, they're pro PBC no matter what, or a big Harrison fan or something, which I like Harrison. But Perella, I realize he did fight in, like, on his way up. I don't know what he fought in the amateurs, actually, but I know when he came in the pros, you know, he was above welterweight. So technically he did fight above welterweight, but that's a normal thing in boxing. It's just your comeback fight, cool, like I mentioned. Maybe Perella's having problems, and we just don't know it. He's having problems making 147, and this he wants to go to 54. But this is a big step just to be like, oh, this is my first fight at 54, isn't it? I'm not saying he's got all these options, but okay, so the fight's the fight. Cool. But a Fox main event, it's a head scratcher. And some of this stuff, you know, makes people knee-jerk and say, oh, you know, PBC, anti-PBC from the start will say, oh, dude, none of the fights are good anyway, right? They've been all garbage anyway, and that's bullshit. It's just there's two different – there's a big difference, a wide gap of the first wave of PBC on Fox from, what did I say, December 2018 until the pandemic, and then now, the recent run, okay? And there's a couple of things in there. I've been thinking about this, doing a little research, looking at, for instance, the MLB, the baseball professionals, for those who don't know what that is, especially in the UK, shouts out to the UK, MLB, professional baseball. Well, MLB, they were able to have a shortened season last year, 60 games, I think it was, and they had their playoffs and they made it through. But they lost a lot of Fox cards from May, June, and July, a lot of them. And, you know, we know the budget cuts hit. You could see the payment of the full cards comparatively before the pandemic. So there is some budget cuts. We know there's budget cuts as far as shoulder programming. That PBC show got cut. They're not doing as much shoulder programming in general. I think the only one we saw was for Truax and Plant. Right? They did something on that. We're going to get shoulder programming for, like, their pay-per-views and the bigger fights, but are they going to put the bigger fights on, and when's that going to happen? My point is, the MLB law, first of all, here's an example. So the UFC signs a deal that's much bigger than Top Rank, right? And they've already done two ABC cards. Now, it's coming on in a couple months. It'll be 3 months, or 3 years, 3 months. 3 years since Top Rank signed with ESPN. No ABC cards. Now, I'm not complaining. A lot of people I see on Twitter, why don't they do that? Because it's the size of the deal, dude. And I bring this up, and just the more promotion in general. Well, the size of the deal, Cabal, the MLB, to the PBC deal, is there's not even a comparison. So, clearly, you know, I bring it up because when you look at the Fox schedule in the, like, from May, June, and July, right, it's pretty telling, you know? Like, Saturday night is booked on MLB for Fox, like, from May 22nd is when Fox kicks off on that. And I think that's right around the time, maybe it's like a week early, maybe it's Memorial Day that they normally do kick off on it, but that's the first big game, May 22nd. Now, they don't miss an MLB Saturday night all the way through May, all the way through June, and I believe June 26th, all the way through June, all the way through July. I'm looking at it right now, July 17th, it's straight through. And usually, that's how I would tell which nights were going to be the Fox in June and July, because you could go, okay, you look at the MLB, okay, they got an open date. Well, there's no open dates from May 22nd to July 17th. And that makes sense that they wouldn't give the PBC that slot in prime time because they got to make up for the bigger contract, right? Makes sense. And the FS1 seems to be more active and early as well. Now, they could just skip local news on Fox after the game and do a lead-in right to the PBC twice, you know, once in June, once in July. That's possible. But it's also possible that they're going to wait till late July or August and do a bunch of cards like they just did in this last August. You know how they had like four cards in like 5 or 6 weeks? It started with Jamal James and Delorme and went through Ugas and Ramos. Those are the two acceptable main events, by the way. The other one's Lara against, you know, some dude we never really heard of, Formella for Porter, Ortiz, blah, 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 right? This one coming up, Harrison Perella, right? So is that something part of the budget cut or part of the maneuver is, hey, you know, you're going to have to do this. Now, are they saying, hey, let's do this, and then maybe they come back really strong in August? I think in August, well, before August, but, you know, in the summer, I think we will find out more about that. I mean, if they have a June card, then we'll know maybe they're switching it to Sunday nights. Maybe they're switching to the Thursday nights. Maybe it is a lead-in, and they just say, screw the early news, which is what on Fox is in like 20-some-odd markets. They run like a, this is Central Time, a 9 o'clock news hour instead of the regular 10 o'clock local, you know? So, you know, that the reason why I bring this up is because, okay, well, they had to maneuver. They had to budget cut. They had, you know, it's not just knee-jerk, nope, this is it. A little birdie told me, Glazier told me, and then who wrote the article for Ring? I think it was Woodsy. He said that he heard that this is it. This is our last one. So, and Glazier said this is their contract, like this is their last year of on the contract. Well, as far as the 4 year contract, that's next year. Showtime's this year. Now, I don't know if they tweaked that since the pandemic, and this is their last year. But there was a Fox representative that did come out and say, "We're going to go through the whole contract. We're not cutting them." But you know, HBO, like I mentioned before, HBO would say stuff too, and then all of a sudden, you know, it turned. But I'm bringing up the MLB because it seems like a legitimate reason why they wouldn't get the Fox date this summer, right? But it doesn't necessarily explain everything. Maybe they won't get those and they won't have as many big ratings, and they didn't last year of it because, you know, the way they had to close the year to where they don't have as much, you know, budget now. We'll get back to that because we are going to talk about the pay-per-views and whatnot. Because a lot of misinformation about time and time again, them losing money on pay-per-views. And we hear rumored gates, but we don't always get to the actual, or not rumored gates, but rumor purse bids. I said it wrong too. Rumored purses. So we hear, it's guaranteed 20 mil. It's guaranteed 30 mil. We never really know exactly what it is, you know, unless they come out and talk about it more. So, you know, could it be that they're just not happy with the product and the ratings haven't been there even when the product was much better? Maybe the ratings aren't there. Now, and that could be it. That could be it. I don't know any of this. You know what I mean? But as far as the pay-per-view stuff goes, Ruiz Areola as a main event seems like it can go one of a few ways. Like, hey, in the contract, I owe you a certain amount of pay-per-views, and I only delivered one last year, right, because of the pandemic. It was the Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman, or not Keith Thurman, but Spence. And that could be part of it, too. They weren't able to make profit on those three other ones to help out their budget. We don't know the exact detail of their deals and what it goes off of. But some of the filings in the annual reports, and you can look at quarter reports and the 10-K or whatever, you can look at it and it says right there whether their content price went up or whatever. But they kept mentioning papers. I'm just bringing up Ruiz Areola because I personally don't think that's a quality main event. Okay? Now, I like the undercard. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I believe, if that was Ruiz and Luis Ortiz, well, shit, sign me up for that. I'd pay for that, no problem. Now, they did drop it to $50. Let's see if they hang with that price or they go back up to $75. Maybe they're thinking, well, we know this isn't a great main event. It's not a good main event card, you know, the event, main event, so we're going to drop the price a little. Like I said, though, the undercard is solid. But in this type of main event, though, I think the co-feature has to be more important than it is. of course, you're not going to have like a great, great fight on the undercard in this scenario. You're probably, you know, I mean, Areola's probably not, it's not like Areola has a, you're going to owe him $3 or $5 million. You know what I mean? I think this is an affordable pay-per-view, but as far as the budget for it, but I'll say this though, because I'm not the type to only go off paper or only go off what I said or what other people said or what the media said. I like to see what happens in the ring. And I got to say, if let's say two out of the three undercard fights pop off, and then the main event is really some fun entertainment, there is a chance that people could walk away going, I got my money's worth. Because everybody has a definition, and a lot of times it's different, of money's worth. Some people thought Tyson and Roy Jones was money's worth. Some people think these Triller, because they have musical acts, are money's worth. It's an interest. Well, I know that person. Cool, they got music on there too. You know, I don't really want to buy a pay-per-view based off musical acts, personally. Now, I've watched documentaries that revolve around a concert tour on YouTube, and back in the day, even rental, you know, renting it at Blockbuster. I have rented live, you know, Jimi Hendrix performances or seen them on YouTube or whatever. But it wasn't 50, you know what I mean? It wasn't, I don't know. It is what it is. My point is everybody has that. They have a, what they deem, you know, entertainment and value. And I got to admit, one of my friends texted me, was like, dude, that Ruiz Areola, I'm down. If you got the night off, I'm down. Text another friend that I knew liked Ruiz. He's down. You know, so Ruiz is, we don't really know where his name is right now, but he definitely is higher than it was before, obviously. So, to me, you know, it just seems like these are all affordable fights, and it's right around Cinco de Mayo. So, when I'm talking about pay-per-views, they're either this is part of the contract, and this is what Al's giving them, saying, hey, dude, I'm going to try to make some money out of this because it's an affordable one. I'm not going to have to pay both of them $5 million or more, and we're going to get through this. Or, and I know it's sacrilegious to say something, you know, that isn't anti-PBC to some people, or they're that happy with the pay-per-view product that they think they can milk it with Ruiz Areola because it's, you know, Cinco de Mayo. It's a bunch of Mexican-American fights on the card. It's a Mexican-heavy thing. So it's just what people have been doing for quite some time, right? But there has been a lot of misinformation. We know any big fight the PBC has, people are going to lie about the live gate, the audience, on the lead-up. And then when we get the numbers, a lot of times it's bullshit. But this is the smear campaign that's been happening for a long time. It is what it is. But we're going to the horse's mouth here. And this is all public information. And when you read the company's revenue increased 5% for the 3 months ending in September 30th, 2019, that's the part of the 10K quarterly thing that we're talking about. That would be Pacquiao with that huge, huge minimum, right? Pacquiao, Thurman, and Spence and Porter would be involved in this, okay? This is not me saying it. This is the company to their shareholders. This is the information they're sharing because they have to, right? And they talk about, you know, a variety of things of revenue and the Emmy Awards and FIFA and, you know, World Cup events and all this stuff, right? They're talking about, they're explaining it. Now, here's what it says as far as pertaining to the PBC. It says the increase in other revenues was primarily due to higher digital content licensing revenue at the Fox network and revenues generated from the operations of the Fox studios a lot for third parties and from the Premier Boxing Champion pay-per-views. So they're not going to state a revenue increase reason and put pay-per-views there if it didn't happen. You see what I'm saying? This is Fox. This is not me. This is not you. This is information that is factual. It's not just Glazer trying to get retweets and likes. It's not just a hit piece or a smear campaign on Al Heyman. These are real facts, okay? And then, it said operating expenses decreased 2% for the 3 months ending September 30th, 2019, blah, 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 blah. So, they said there's a decrease because they didn't have World Cup events. Also, the UFC had gone on, so they're, of course, it's going to be cheaper. And that's what I think people get lost in it. Not only does Fox get the pay-per-view revenue from this, remember, the UFC deal, not only was it way more per year, but they didn't get any of the cut from the pay-per-view. That's part of the selling point. Remember, you got to make these folks money to keep your deal alive. And if he's putting quality, I'll say Ruiz Areola is not quality pay-per-view on paper in a main event. But, Spence and Porter was. Thurman and Pacquiao was. I thought Ortiz and Wilder was. Because remember, a lot of the media went around, one of them, Montero, went to a couple different shows and said that they're not selling any tickets. It's horrendous, right? And then they sold $4 million at the gate. But then you look around and you take Canelo and Pacquiao out of the scenario. Who else is doing, these type of gates, even getting the $2 million at the gate? These are just facts. Now, not every live gate gets reported. It's all up to each state, the state athletic commission. But this is, you can follow it up. And then people say, well, you could just pay the tax and that goes down as a sold ticket. Yeah, it goes down as that, but it goes down as $13 or $18 or $36 or $75. It's the tax on the ticket. But what's the biggest amount of the ticket price, not the tax? So you're still going to find out if they did in fact do that, sell, sit there and pay for the tax and then comp the tickets. So you can literally do that for people that don't know that. You can just pay the tax, the state tax on it, and then give the comps out. But the grand total of the live gate revenue tells you if they did that or not, especially for these big events. And sure, some MGM and Las Vegas stuff, it is overpriced. And they're only going to sell 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 or 9,000 tickets or something like that. But look at the gate. That's the whole point. But here's what it said. So they were talking about the decrease in sports programming rights, right? And then said that was partially offset by contractual rate increases for the NFL, for the MLB, college football, and PBC content. So this is, like I said, for the shareholders. This is real information. This isn't just bullshit. So this is right before the end of the beginning of the pandemic. It says March 31st, 2020. So why I say that is because that's both Wilder fights, Wilder Ortiz and Wilder Fury. And we heard about the guarantees. We heard about if it made money or not. But this is what it's saying for this, okay? I just got to put this one a little closer. The increase in other revenues was primarily attributed to the higher sports subleasing revenue and, for the 9 months ending March 31st, 2020, higher revenues generated from Premier Boxing Champion pay-per-view events. So, actually, that might include Spence in that, now that I do the math, Spence and that too, in Porter. But this isn't just anybody just randomly talking, okay? This isn't a smear campaign one way or the other. These are just facts. So you could sit there and listen to Boxing Twitter and some of the media members that love to just smash it, and I'm talking about the PBC, cool. I'd rather really look at why the hell this is happening. So my guess is that they're going to do August, a bunch of, like, a late July and August fights, like 4 and 6 weeks like they did last year. And we will see the quality of those main events, and that will help decide if there is a future in this deal. Up until the pandemic, I would say they're happy with their product because they're making money off the pay-per-view. And remember, the amount of money they're paying for this deal is not as much as you think. And maybe if they were, let's just say they were to extend, or maybe they already tweaked the deal a little bit because of the pandemic and they're only going to have 6 prime times now. I don't know. I've always said since they announced this deal, I thought 10 prime time Fox, you know, I thought that was pretty intense. It's like, wow, really? They're giving them 10, and really 8 of them were prime time. The other 2 were for, like, you know, the prelims. So it was some, it was like an hour before prime time and like hour from basically 6 to 8 or 7 to 9 Eastern time. You know, the 2 hours of free marketing to sell the pay-per-view that starts at 8 or 9 Eastern, right? That's basically what it seemed like those were. So I think we'll get a much better picture of it once we get those August fights. Now, if they have lead-ins on in June, then we'll know. And maybe they're shaving up money here, saving some money there, cutting the budget there, and then they're going to go strong from August on. I don't know. Another thing is the FS1 cards. There is yet to be a FS1 card 12 a year. They have 12 once a month usually. Now, I think they've skipped a month before, and they've done 2 in a month. So what's up with those? That's another reason why they go, what the hell? The Fox content, or, you know, the fights pretty much suck right now as far as the main events. And then there hasn't been any FS1 cards besides the prelims. But those aren't part of the – I mean, those are part of the deal, but it's – there's still supposed to be 12 per month. Or that'd be a lot. 12 per year. Where are those? Well – either, like I said, it's budget and those are gone, which I don't believe those are, but maybe they are. Maybe they are. Or they're going to double up and do them twice a month and do, I don't know, May, June, July, or June, July, August, or and just do twice a month. And then when you look at FS1 and their cards, or not cards, but, you know, FS1 with MLB, there are some double headers on Saturday nights, which that would be a perfect lead-in. You know, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they're going to do toe-to-toe Tuesdays again. I noticed as the summer goes on, when you get a little deeper in there, FS1 does have some Tuesday nights. So maybe it'll be toe-to-toe Tuesdays after. Like here, is this the first one? May 25th, Tuesday. June 1st, Tuesday. Maybe they're going to put them after that. Maybe those are the time, since there's no Saturday shows, that FS1 is going to do more of those. So I don't know. I can't sit there and tell you exactly. It looks like by June 19th and June 26th, so after that Fox, oh wait, June 19th, there's an FS1. Okay, so, yeah, so I don't know. I'm not really sure, but seeing that schedule all the way to July 17th, that tells me they have to make up for all those Fox, you know, programming that they didn't get from the MLB. So, you know, just guessing, right, taking my best guess with evidence and looking at it, logical, whatever, I'm thinking they're going to either double or triple up those FS1 cards. I'd say double maybe. Maybe not, though. I don't know. It'd be nice, though. And the thing about FS1, they still, like, they need, especially with the pandemic, but they need viewership. And even though a lot of people on Boxing Twitter, like I mentioned with the Ring City USA, they look at that like, oh, those are shitty ratings. But that's where the hardcore, that's the hardcore level, dude. So if you can get a doubleheader on ML, you know, 2 baseball games, and one of them does 500,000 and the other does 375. Well, if you can get 25, 50, 100, whatever, right? And NASCAR plays in this too. Maybe they'll have, like they did with the prelims, they'll have a NASCAR event that and then boxing's after that. The point is, for a network like FS1, to be able to put something on for 2.5, 3 hours, and they know that it's at least going to hold or peak higher, it's more than putting a replay. It's going to get them more ad revenue than just putting a run-of-the-mill replay. Because remember, they own that replay, but they own PBC2 right now, that content. So, you know what I'm saying? So maybe that's the plan of attack. Maybe that's how it's going to be for next year, too, that they hit up early, then they go away, and it's FS1, and then, boom, they hit up August and a little September. I don't know. I'm just going through as much information as you can tell, because as you can think of and look at and that type of thing, because this is exactly what I was doing in 2017 and 2018 when a lot of folks were saying PBC's dead, and then he got a network deal. So just like DAZN, I you know, the sports business has given us a lot of information, and we talked it through. I didn't say they're dead. I know Coppinger just came out with that story. They've been dead in the, you know, in the water, and they were left for dead, and now they're back triumphantly. Don't get me wrong. DAZN's putting out the best product this year. The first quarter, they own the first quarter. No doubt for hardcore fight fans, they made the month of March not just a basketball month. That's for damn sure. Now, it took them a while to get going, and they didn't close. They didn't have a great year last year, right? But they're having a great year. ESPN closed the best last year. Now, they also had about 10 weeks of real mediocre to some good, but some just trash fights. They decided to do it a different way. But anyway, a lot of it is what have you done for me lately, right? Because people in the summer were just trashing ESPN. Then by the end, they're like, dude, ESPN's a shit. Look, they don't do pay-per-views. A lot of times they don't do pay-per-views because they can't sell the pay-per-view. So I can't give them credit for like, hey, they kept that fight off pay-per-view. They kept Ramirez and Taylor off pay-per-view. Dude, that wasn't going to be a pay-per-view, though. So I can't give them credit for keeping stuff off pay-per-view when they don't have the commodities to do a pay-per-view. And that's what's funny about this whole thing ever since not just DAZN, but the combination of DAZN and the PBC on Fox, or, you know, Fox doing pay-per-views. Then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of media members, intern fans too, had a whole lot of different views on pay-per-view and what was worthy and what was not. And it's funny because when you look at some of the early fights and the numbers, I mean, someone tweeted this the other day, Morales Pacquiao, 350,000. Part two, 360. Pacquiao Larios, 120. Pacquiao Morales 3, 350. Against Solis, 150. Pacquiao Barrera Part two, 350. Pacquiao Diaz, 206. And this one is what really made a big dent in that below lightweight stuff. I think it was the best one, lightweight and down or under lightweight fight, Pacquiao and Marquez, as far as it was called Unfinished Business. I'm looking at it. That did like over 400,000. But, you know, when these, and I remember saying this not too long ago, you know, they're just talking about all this, you know, it's like each and every main event just gets hypercritical. And then they say, this is not how you're putting all your best stuff on pay-per-view. Well, wasn't that the argument before that you, that's when the media would usually get down on the promoter and the network saying, dude, why is this on pay-per-view? Why is Ruiz Ariel on pay-per-view? Does that mean that this deal's that bad? Or does that mean they're happy with the pay-per-view and they're going to milk it? You know, speaking of what Coppinger said, how DAZN once left for dead. They were left for dead. Retooled and rebounded with boxing's best schedule. Funny, because I didn't see this exact type article before, but this is what he said in it. Over the summer, DAZN quietly underwent leadership overhaul. Gone are the days of nearly eight-figure licensing fees for solid matchups that don't truly move the needle. Ramirez Hooker, Mikey Garcia-Vargas. In its place, at least so far, appears to be responsible spending on compelling action fights that resonate throughout the boxing industry. And that's fair to an extent, but what was the guarantee for the Yildirim fight? I mean, that's a lot of money. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, that's about it for the PBC on Fox stuff. I try to do a variety of things to not just, like I said, knee-jerk the other way or listen to this or that. Or, you know, I like to try to cover it, try to do some homework and cover it. So, like I said, that would be phenomenal if Fox wanted to do lead-ins twice this summer, June and July. That would be phenomenal. But I just don't know if those, I think it's like 25 different Fox studios across the country. I think Minneapolis ranks like 18th the last time I checked. But anyway, that nightly news has to mean something to them. So I don't know. Would they take a half-hour break like Saturday Night Live and then go to the fights? I don't know. Would they be willing just to skip that for the night on Saturday night? Maybe that's their lowest viewership, and I don't know. Don't get me wrong. That'd be great. I don't anticipate that happening. But that'd be great. And we've already seen the FS1 baseball go to boxing, so I anticipate some of that happening. Hopefully it happens more often, you know. We'll see. Okay, let's see here. Oh, this is – so we're going on the current boxing, you know, fight news. Boxing news. No shit, you're listening to a boxing channel. So boxing Twitter, boxing news, all that. This is Frank Warren. This is a little while ago. Someone just sent this to me earlier today or yesterday. We're talking about Usyk. Hi, Alex. We haven't received any counteroffer from you or your team. We made an offer to your manager again last week. Joe wants the fight. We want this fight. It sounds like you want this fight. Let's get it made for the fans. Usyk responded, Joyce's team made us an offer. The offer was unsuitable, so we made a more viable counteroffer. Joyce shouldn't think too much of himself and fall in line with everybody else. I'll throw in, or I'll be the one making the decisions. And he also said that he had a, I think he said something like, I have, oh, recently Dana White wrote to me, this is what he said for Export UA, recently Dana White wrote to me if I would like to try myself in UFC. I replied, send an offer, I'm ready. So I have many options for what to do. I'm not just going to still sit around and wait for Joshua Fury. I'll find someone to box with, he said. Ryan Garcia versus Javier Fortuna is ordered by the WBC. I think it's for an interim. The purse bid is April 16th. I really hope that fight happens. That would be awesome. Tyson's rep tells TMZ Sports Mike misspoke when he declared the fight with Evander Holyfield was on in Miami for May 29th. Go figure. The rep said Tyson wasn't aware the two sides were far apart at the negotiation table. And unless something drastic happens, Mike and Evander will not be fighting for a third time. Mike misspoke. And then we just saw Evander Holyfield hooking up with Triller today. I think he was boarding a private jet. Shakur Stevenson, this is Cameron Wolf of ESPN. Shakur Stevenson set to headline ESPN's June 12th Puerto Rican Day Parade card in NYC. Not finalized, but it sounds like Nakathila? Sounds like Edgar Berlanga is expected to be the co-feature as long as it goes well. He doesn't get hurt or, you know, obviously wins April 24th. And I think that was the date that was set for Teofimo Lopez. Something to think about there. In an interview, I can't remember who did this interview, but Ronnie Shields states that it looks like June 12th is the return for Jermall Charlo. No opponent yet. And he doesn't believe Jermall will be on the card, which is no surprise there. Juan Estrada has been upgraded to the WBC franchise champion and the WBC have approved a trilogy fight with Roman Gonzalez to happen next, which is great news. Rungvisai and Kodros ordered for the standard title, and winners will be ordered to meet afterwards, which is kind of weird because the franchise is supposed to not be able to have the Mando. You know, the WBC and all these belts, the sanctioning belts, ABCs, whatever you want to call them, they just make the rules as they go. They write the rules. They make the rules. Why don't they just say, hey, dude, you know, we've analyzed the situation and what's good for boxing. They could just do this exact same thing without doing the franchise shit. You know, just do it. Just do that. That's fine. But don't do the franchise. Like, it just adds to it, dude. It just adds to stupid stuff. Whatever. It is what it is, right? What else we got for news before I get to the boxing Twitter and then I get the hell on out of here? Chavez Jr. and Silva. Anderson Silva and JCC Jr. Live on pay-per-view June 19th. I think, what is it? Chavez Sr. and who is he fighting again? I forgot. On the card. Exhibition. According to Eddie Hearn, they will not be able to reach a deal with Hunter in, is it Hrgvacic? I can't remember how to say that dude's name. That big-ass heavyweight, though. It'll go to purse bid April 6th. It's an IBF title eliminator. There actually was a little bit of news as far as pertaining to what was it, Wasserman? Oh, yeah. Announced, this is an announcement. Global sports agency Wasserman have acquired Team Sutherland in a multi-million pound deal, informed Wasserman Boxing. So they intend to break into promoting with Sutherland's, and the UK being a big target market. Obviously, some folks think that's going to be the Sky Sports deal because some DAZN and Eddie are going to hook up after this pause. Wasserman, though, is like, that's the second or third largest sports agency representatives. They have over $5 billion in contract value under management. Wow, Rollins, I think, posted this. With more than $330 million in earnable commission as of 2020, Wasserman is rapidly gaining ground into CAA for the top spot of global sports agency rankings. Wasserman made a massive leap this year thanks to its continued roll up on smaller shops that have previously appeared on the Forbes list, including football agency Key Sports, as well as hockey agency Acme World Sports. Wasserman also ranks among the top reps for the WNBA players and Olympic athletes and action sports stars. So it sounds like the World Boxing Super Series Season 3 is going to happen. So that's good news. I'd say that's, I think that qualifies as good news. All right, now we're going to go boxing Twitter and get the hell out of here. This is Corey Erdman, I think it is. I thought it was Eldman. Erdman. Canada, right? I believe, maybe I'm wrong. Rumors of Manny Pacquiao fighting in Abu Dhabi date all the way back to 2015, and he's correct on that. Thus far, a fight hasn't materialized, but he did launch a cryptocurrency called PAC. Maybe enough PAC tokens make Pacquiao and Crawford happen. Who knows? Like I said, I hope so, man. I'm all for that. How many times are we going to get, are we going to let a deal, okay, how many times are we going to let a deal is almost in place for, boom, to fight Manny Pacquiao? Rumors take over the timeline. Not fooling me this time. I get that all these matches make headlines. I get they're good business that generates dollars. I don't begrudge the athletes or the promoters one bit, but I hope the journalist place is where it should be put, basically. Journalist's place. Oh, there it is. Okay, my shit was a little messed up. There we go. Journalist's place is where it should be. You know, like, just not true boxing or true MMA. So make your money cool, but let's report it like you would any pay-per-view and tell people it's an exhibition. Tell people, hey, not tell people they know it, but, you know, act accordingly. Don't sit there and get super pumped because it's a popular dude in his 50s, fought in a while, but then dump on a quality pay-per-view with fighters in their prime. I've been asking for that in quite some time. Boxing coverage is in such a weird spot when writers are using their platform to advertise pay-per-views they're working on, but crapping on the other ones they aren't working on. Yes. If you're PR, cool, but if you're saying you're a media member, that's not cool. That's not cool at all. All right, we got just a little bit more of these, and then we'll get out of here. I read takes that Canelo is better than Gallo because Estrada went life and death with Roman. Now, I'm not saying Gallo is better than Estrada is better than Canelo, but Chocolatito fight is not the one to judge it by. Only time Canelo ever fought anywhere near Chocolatito level or better, he got blank 12-0. Well, when you say anything near or better, well, you could have just said, you know, that's a weird, like, I get what he's saying, that's true, but I don't know. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, Chocolatito and, you know, Golovkin are the same, and Golovkin's way better. I don't think that, but it's a little funky because it's like anywhere near Chocolatito's level or better, he got blanketed 12-0. I mean, the Mayweather, it's much higher than that. But anyway, if you asked a fight promoter how many lies they told today, do you think they could remember? Because it got to be like breathing for them, or even a second language. That can be true, especially for some. Oh, this is fun. This is really fun. Why is Canelo avoiding good black fighters? Trout was on the decline. So what other excuses do you have? So now Austin Trout, who was in his prime and undefeated, coming off a great win over Cotto, was on the decline when he fought Canelo? I mean, how much more fanboy can you get on that one? And by the way, notice how I didn't say anything about Crawford's comments. I didn't add to the segment about Crawford and Canelo, because some of the stuff he was saying about that's like, dude, look in the mirror. Basically, this dude, this is some fanboy stuff. Sean Porter's hoe ass ain't hurt. He's scared to fight Bud. Well, hurt. Ain't hurt. He had COVID, dude. And dude followed up saying, well, add that to the list in excuses. COVID, and he's still recovering from that knockdown in the 11th back in 2019, and probably the one back in the 12th against Broner. Like, he's used that as an excuse before. That's just so funny, dude. He's not hurt. He's just scared of Bud. Wow, that's some fanboy stuff. Here is something interesting. Crawford is one of a handful of fighters with two Olympic gold medalists on his resume. Make sure you talk about his resume. Or when you talk about his resume, make sure you mention that. And that's cool, dude. But, I mean, oh, boy, that beat Stevenson in the amateurs, lost his first fight, and he's still looking like he's looking a little better now, but it's going to take him a little while to get that amateur style out of there. So Felix Diaz at 140, that was a solid fight. He clowned him, literally, when he was doing that, you know, touch him on the top of his head, messing with him. And then obviously Gamboa. But Gamboa at 26, quality win, but to go the gold medal route. Okay, one more. U.S. boxing fans think that Uzbekistan is in Europe. Yeah, because the Eastern Europe takeover. But Uzbekistan looks like they got some pros coming, some real deal pros coming. All right, I'm going to shut this one down. Enjoy the fights. They start probably within 12 hours, if you want to think about the Aussie fight, Tim Zhu and Dennis Hogan. Otherwise, enjoy the fights. We definitely will be back next week. I'm out of here. Peace.
Once you become the world champion,